hitting everything. First thing I wanted to say this morning is that I know that one of the things that has really hit me in a unique way this week has been the passing of Andy Jones. One of those things that makes you realize, number one, how short really life is and how sudden things can happen. He basically got sick this summer and didn't know what the problem was. They found a tumor, and within 2 weeks, he was passed away. Brandon sent out a really good message to everybody. Brandon, I thank you for that. Challenging us to stay connected better. I did try to call him a couple of times and said his phone was out of service, but I didn't really go beyond that. You know, where is Andy? And we just assumed he was working, and you know, he was always a really hard worker. But he was such a tender-hearted, unique individual. I loved listening to his sermons because he always put so much thought and effort and energy into them. And it wasn't, he was not a Ira North standing up here booming voice, and you know, but everybody has their own strengths, and for him it was the way that his heart touched your heart when he was speaking to you. And actually this morning, in honor of Andy, Becky has put one of his articles in our bulletin, one of the ones that she just picked out that just really had touched her, some of the thoughts that he had had. So I want you to keep his family in your prayers. I don't think his family are members of the church, or they're not faithful members of the church. So keep them in your prayers, that this may touch them in a way that might open their eyes to who Andy had really become in his life. He had really become a very grounded, strong individual in the Lord. And so let's keep definitely his family in our prayers. And again, take the message of that to when there are people that we don't see, when there are people who have been gone for a few weeks, that we don't know where they are, even if we just assume that we know, let's not assume. Let's take the time and energy and go and find out what's going on with them, even at the risk of maybe offending them. Sometimes that's what we're afraid of. Well, you know, if they're not here, there's something going on. And but let's not be like that. I know we're not that well. Maybe we are sometimes like that in our own families. But this to me is my family, and to you it is as well. And so let's stay connected with each other in a very special way. I apologize for my voice. I coached 2 basketball games yesterday, and last week was our first week of practice at school, and so my voice is not in good shape. So I hope that you'll be able to not be distracted by the voice that I have this morning. Trying something a little new today. The last few times I've preached, I really like just preaching without notes, without any kind of a PowerPoint, because it takes preparation, you know. And so I don't want to go there, you know. But I promised Kelsey. She said, "Dude, give me an object lesson. Give us something we can look at. Give us something." And so I promised her I would do it, and so. Trying something a little different. I'm also trying a little bit different program. It's called Prezi. I don't know if anybody's is familiar with it. I'm not that familiar with it. Jack was helping me with it during Sunday school. No, we were talking about how I didn't really know what I was doing. He was like, "Then why are you doing it?" You know, you know, Jack. He just tells you how it is. So this morning we're gonna talk about developing a Satan strategy. Developing a Satan strategy. I don't really know what to name it. It's always hard to come up with a name. It's harder to do that than to actually come up with the lesson. How many of you are people that in your lives develop strategies for things? How many of you are strategy type people? Raise your hand if you are a strategy person. That you, when you see a something that you want to tackle, you sit down and you write it out and you develop a strategy. I can tell you right now, that is not me. I've gotten better at it. But I'm the type of person, and maybe some of you are this way, I won't make you raise your hands out of embarrassment, but you're just the type of person that just sort of wings it. You know, you go into a situation, and over the course of time, you've developed maybe the skill or the ability to make up for your faults by just winging. I've depended on it way too much, and I've gotten burned on it too many, many times. But if we see something that's really important, such as, let's just take an example in our life, such as our finances. What kind of trouble do we get ourselves in when we wing our finances? Debt. And then you turn around and you're like, how did I get in this mess? Becky? You know, you automatically turn to your spouse and, you know, you blame them. And then you sleep on the couch for a week. But you want to sit down and develop a strategy, right? This is how much we have. I mean, it doesn't seem like rocket science, but still, we don't do it very much. This is how much we have, and this is how much we have to spend, and this is what we have left over. How are we going to decide how we're going to spend that money? And how does our spending of our money, how does that kind of fit into my Christian life? Am I doing things? Am I spending my money in ways that I really shouldn't? And so you're kind of developing a strategy. What are the types of things in life should we develop strategies for? Okay, our investments, all right? If we don't make a strategy for our future, then guess what? You'll be working until you're 95, like me, okay? If you didn't think about it early enough, Kelsey is in a finance class at school, which I really like. It's a Dave Ramsey course. And she's learning a lot of stuff that I didn't learn when I was in high school. When you start early, guess what? You gain so much more reward, right? And if you will actually take the time to build a strategy, and we can actually hire people to help us do that, which is really helpful, right? Because most of us are not very, very good in that area. What other areas of our life? What about our schooling? You don't develop a strategy when you're, say, you're in eighth grade, and you say, I want to be a doctor. Well, if you don't develop a strategy, guess what? There's not going to be one. Because you got to start studying when you're in eighth grade. And you got to start thinking in those terms. It doesn't have to be anything really elaborate, but yet you're already thinking about it. And you're placing things in your mind and in your life that are going to help you reach that goal. How often do people sabotage their careers because they don't plan? They don't have a strategy. Oh, I'll start studying when I'm 11th grade. Well, by that time, you're not going to get into medical school, right? You have to start planning and working. And getting it kind of in your mind. There are many, many, we could talk about other areas of our lives that we plan. Our jobs, our job promotions, or whatever it is that we're doing for Chris, for his business strategy, right? Chris has always been an impressive person to me in that he is a person of strategy. If you've ever talked to him, it doesn't always work out, right? I mean, it doesn't always work the way you plan it. But yet, Chris has a plan for every area. Well, it's just sickening to me. You go to work with him and he says, okay, at this time we're going here and that time we're going here. From 11:05 to 11:12 we're going to eat. And then from this time to that time, if that. And that's usually what gets left out is the eating. But he has a strategy. And he has kind of what the end result is going to be in his life. And because of that, he has been blessed in his business. So we do all this stuff in our physical life. How often do we have a strategy in our spiritual life? How many of us sit down and think about a strategy of life in our spiritual walk? Most people's strategy in their spiritual walk is the same in their regular life. We just wing it, right? I'll just be a moral person, and I'll just read my Bible whenever I get a chance, and I'll pray, and I'll come to church, and I'll go to camp in the summer, and I'll do this. These are the things that I do. But what about the day-to-day things that come our way? If I don't have a strategy, then guess what happens? Just like our finances, just like our businesses, just like our schooling, many times we fall flat. And we look back from we're 45 years old, and we look back and we're saying, man, I wish I was further along. I wish I was more advanced in my spiritual life. Look at all these pitfalls that I've had. Look at all these things I've fallen into. I'm embarrassed to even tell my kids the mistakes I've made because they're so stupid. If I'd had a plan, if I'd had a strategy, you know, maybe it would have been different. So we're going to talk this morning about developing a Satan strategy. Because I can guarantee you this, he has one. And so we're going to look first at what his strategy is against us, and then we're going to talk about how we counteract that particular strategy. And by the way, this is not, it's not rocket science, and it's not anything that is, I'm not going to hit every point that's available on this, okay? We only have a few minutes. But just a few things to maybe get us started down the road, started down the mindset of developing a strategy in your own life. Because for you, you're different than me. You struggle with different things, and certain parts of what Satan throws at you are a lot more difficult for you than they are for me. And so your strategy has got to be tailor-made. We don't just Google Satan's strategy and we just apply it to our life, right? Chris doesn't Google, I want a strategy for a good business. And then he takes that and he just does everything, right? It has to be adapted, and it takes a little work in your own life. The first thing I want to do, hopefully, if this thing works, is I want to talk about two verses that seem random and unrelated, and you're on, what does this have to do with our topic? And we're going to come back to them, and I'm going to tell you why they have everything to do with this idea of our strategy. The first one is Mark chapter 12, verse 30. And in the context, they've asked him, what's the most important command? And Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And then Ephesians chapter 6, Paul is telling the Ephesians who are struggling with Satan, struggling with all sorts of things hitting them from the outside, he says, put on God's armor so that you can make a stand against the tricks of the devil. Anybody ever studied? Anybody like to study war? I know we got a lot of people who like to play games about war. Right? And what's the most important? I was actually asking Jack this morning. When I came into class this morning, he was playing a game. What was it called? Okay, Clash of Clans. Okay? And it's about people who are fighting each other. Right? And I asked him, how important is it to build a strategy in the game? Chris, when you're playing Catan, how important is it to build a strategy? When you're playing that game, whatever it was, when we were at that cabin and Chef ended up destroying all you, he had a strategy from the very beginning. He knew what he was doing. He was setting all of you up. And I watched it, and it was a thing of beauty to watch all of them just go, oh, like all of a sudden, right? Strategy. In the Revolutionary War, it was the clash between the British and who? The colonists. Colonists were not very skilled in warfare. But the British were, right? They had developed it over hundreds of years. And they had their certain style, right? They had a style of warfare. And their style was they just lined up and they just marched at you. And you're thinking, well, that doesn't seem very smart. Because they leave people just exposed and wide open. But nobody beat them. Why not? Okay? Intimidation. But they had developed this strategy, and that's what they were going to do it. So they would line up, and they would shoot, and then they would say, okay, go ahead, take your best shot. But we're going to shoot back as soon as you do. What happened when the Americans tried to, not at the time, they were Americans at the time, but the colonists tried to do the same thing? We got destroyed. Okay, guys, I guess we'll just do what they're doing. Everybody just line up. Doesn't seem smart to me. What do you think those guys were thinking? Who's leading us? This is stupid. I'd rather hide behind a rock. So we were getting destroyed until what? Changed our strategy. What was it? Hide behind rocks. Okay, we would wait till they marched out. We knew with them they were coming because they were in a big line. They would march through. They had all had their red uniforms on, bright red uniforms, not smart in warfare. Okay, they would wear more camouflage type stuff, and they would hide. And they would wait, and they would pick opportunities. Their strategy was not so obvious, was it? But yet it was effective. Now, I'm going to make an application that is, it doesn't seem really right at first. We're the British, And Satan is the colonists. Satan's strategy is not to just come at us head on. I'm the devil and I'm going to... What are we going to do when he does that? Run. Right? If Satan comes at us head on, okay, we've been trained to recognize who Satan is. But he's not going to come at us in like a pitchfork and a red suit. His strategy is a lot more subversive, right? Behind the scenes. He's developed a strategy, okay, that's effective, that is a lot more difficult to deal with. When we're dealing now in warfare, we go to Afghanistan, we have way more troops, we have way more weapons, we have way more technology, but guess who's staying even with us? The Afghanis in the mountains, because they know, they've developed this strategy. And they hide out, and they use spies, and they have all this network behind the scenes. And I believe, okay, that this is the way Satan works with us. He's chosen, okay, to be more quiet, to hide behind the scenes, to hide behind rocks. And when he sees us exposed, he just sticks his head up and he gets us, and he just slinks right back down. So let's talk about some of the things about this strategy that Satan has. The first one is, let's talk about this. Kind of got this out of order. Strategy is important. Okay, it's the key to success. You don't see a bunch of guys, okay, all right, guys, let's just get out there and do it. Okay, in battle. Some football teams, okay, they don't just huddle up before the game and say, all right, guys, or they get behind the theme. Okay, you go that way and you go that way. They've worked on it, right? They have a strategy. Some of the teams don't look like it. Okay, the Titans lately don't look like they have a strategy. Okay, hopefully they'll get a better one. But the point is, and they're not successful, right? When people are confused and they don't have the strategy, it's the key to victory. And the destruction of humans is Satan's ultimate victory. That's what he's after. He's ruthless. He's after you. He wants you to take you where he's going because he doesn't want to be there by himself. And I don't think he has to worry about it. So what are the strategies he uses against us? Think about these two verses, and I want you to really go with me on this. God says that the things that he wants from us are this. To love him with what? Our heart, soul, strength, and mind. And I'm telling you that that's exactly what Satan wants to attack. That's what he attacks. The strongholds that God wants to develop in our lives, that's exactly what he attacks. And when he attacks, he doesn't have to win all of them. He just has to win one of them. God says, I want heart, soul, mind, and strength. Not, I want heart. The other three, you know, that's okay. He says, I want all. So Satan, all he has to do is win one of the battles. And he wins the war. But he's tricky. He's tricky. If I just try to just go out and wing it and don't realize that he's working behind the scenes and that he has a strategy for me, I'm going to lose. I'm going to struggle. And the interesting thing about Satan, we think about God, how God's everywhere at once and he's able to hear all of our prayers and Satan's also able to develop an individual strategy for each of us. He knows what affects him. He knows what affects Joe. And so he hits us where we're most vulnerable. But he's very tricky. And I have to realize that God has given us equipment, right, to use, but we're not going to focus so much on that as we are the strategy. Strategy number one is deception. Deception. Go after their mind. We think about the story of Adam and Eve. How was it that he was able to win that battle? He lied. The Bible says that he is a liar, the father of all lies. Everything he says is a lie. So why do we believe him? He says everything he says. Now, she was at a little bit of a disadvantage, okay? She was in the first battle with Satan, okay, as a human being. But she's given us some great strategies to follow. But deception. In our lives, what type of lies does Satan feed us that sometimes we believe? This is where I want you to give me some feedback. Okay. Yes? That's all he cares about is their happiness. And that's pretty much the lie that he fed Eve, right? And Eve said, "Oh, you know, God wants my happiness, and so, you know, if I really want that, if I really want to be a homosexual and get married, God just wants my happiness. If I really want to," yeah, I mean, that's such a lie that we listen to. Anybody else? Okay, which is absolutely not true. Okay, one time won't hurt. He lies. And he places those lies in very subversive places. I mean, where does he place the lies? In the mouths of people who are on this tube that we watch all the time. We get so involved and ingrained in certain characters that whatever they say has to be true. Well, guess what? It's not. We put these little things in our ears called earbuds, and we listen to music, and all those people do is spout lies. Not all. Some. Okay? But I listen to it. It's like the beat. That's what I hear all the time. I just want to punch somebody. My kids at school, we've been having this discussion. He is a liar, and I have to know that from the very beginning. And so I have to filter everything. Everything that comes through the television, everything that comes through the movies, everything that comes through whatever it is, I have to filter it. Now, is it possible to watch it and filter it and still get something good out of it? Sometimes. Sometimes not. I listen to some of my friends talk about some of the TV shows they watch. It's like, what's your problem? Why would you watch that trash and listen to that music and put that stuff in your head over and over and over again? Well, I don't hear the cuss words. Bull. I don't hear when it talks about the way that men should treat women. It's not true. Satan is a liar. And so I have to know that he's going to lie. And I have to filter everything. Second strategy is distraction. Walk into any public place, and what are you going to see? This. And it ain't just the kids anymore. Every adult's got one too. Now the kids are going, "Hey mom, pay attention to me." As soon as I finish up my Candy Crush game, honey, I will. Okay, is Candy Crush even a game we play anymore? I don't know. I don't have Candy Crush on my phone. I have other stuff that's distracting. We have our iPads and we have our computers and we have our TV and we have our earphones and we have our head. We have all this stuff. And have you ever thought that maybe technology is more of a curse than a help? That it's something, I'm not saying it's evil, okay? It's not evil. A phone, there's nothing evil about a phone. It's how I use it. Family time is gone in this country, for the most part, isn't it? We at our family table have to, whenever we do get a chance to eat together, we made a rule to put our phones away, unless it's me. Oh, well, I'm just checking the sports scores. I'll check and get right back with you, you know. Or I got to check this text from work. Or I got to check an email. Or, you know, Brandon might have emailed me about something important, so I got to check it. You know, of course, that's not the truth. I just use you as an excuse, Brandon. But we get distracted. What happens when we get distracted? We have this guy at school. He's one of the parents of one of our kids. And he's a magician. And he is really good. He's really good. And the other night at the soccer banquet, his daughter plays soccer with Kelsey, and they were like, "Mr. Terry, do some magic tricks." And he just happens to always have a pack of cards with him. And so he pulls out his cards, and he does that, and he does these tricks, and you're like, this one he did, it was this card that just kept floating around to random places around the table. There's no way that it really appeared there, okay? I know that, really, but I have no idea how he did it. How did he do it? He's a master of distraction. He gets you looking here, and then he does something here, and you don't see it. And that's exactly what Satan does to us, okay? Not only does sometimes he use our these devices and other things in our lives to distract us, just and we do things bad because of it, but he takes our focus off of what it really should be on. Like for parents, our kids. We should focus on our kids, not on our phones. I need to get back here. I'm going to step all over my toes here, okay? For kids, focus on other people, relationships. I heard somebody say this week. This is the most social yet unsocial generation of our entire existence. They're on social media. They can post a picture of themselves going, okay, whatever that face is. I don't know what that face is. The old selfie face, right, with the lips stuck out. I don't know what that is, okay? Got those selfie sticks, and they're always taking, and they can post themselves, and all their friends can text them or can respond to them on Instagram or whatever. That's really a cool picture. But we never talk to anybody. Let me text you that. I'm right in the room with you. Right? I find out more about sometimes, and this is sad, sometimes I find about things that go on with Courtney at school from Facebook. And so I check my Facebook to keep up with, you know, because why don't I just call her? Call? What's that? Oh, that's out of my comfort zone to actually talk to somebody. I want to break up with you. You know? It's too bad. It's too bad that God is so behind the times that he doesn't have a phone that has texting. You know? We might actually have a relationship with him if we could do it by text. But the point is we get distracted. What are some of the things that distract us? Sports, television, media, technology, what else? There's a biggie out there nobody's mentioned yet. Jobs. Man, we want to do good for our families. But it can't be such a distraction that I forget. That I have a family to provide for. There's a lot of rich people out there who don't have kids that even love them because they don't have a relationship with them. And so the idea of distraction, he is such a master of distraction. Third, somebody who got distracted in his life, okay? Picture, I wrote Samson at the bottom because you might not recognize who that is. Is that what he looked like early in his life? Everybody wanted to be him. He can do anything. And God gave him just a few simple things, a few simple strategies in his life in order to maintain that relationship with God. And guess what? He got distracted by his own pride. He got distracted by women. He got distracted by you name it. But all Satan had to do, he didn't have to make him be a terrible person. All he had to do is flash a beautiful woman up in front of him. And he would totally lose focus. And so we have to know that he is a master of distraction. We'll do the fourth one first. Fourth strategy. We'll go back to number three since that's just what it's doing. I'm not sure why. Doubt. I had a long conversation yesterday, Friday, with a young lady. She's actually a student that's at our school for the first semester, and she is from Nigeria, and I got to know her a little better, but she came to me after class and she just said, "I don't even know if God exists." She said, I want to believe it, but I don't know if he does. And because of that, it is just totally screwing up with my life. It's just making me, every part of my life I've grown up in the church and it's just messing with every part of my life that everything I go to, I'm like, why would I do that? Because I don't even know if he's there. Why would I pray? Because I don't even know I'm praying to anybody. Is it a bad thing to doubt? Not always. I told her, I said, this is that point in your life to where you're developing your faith on your own. A lot of people don't get that, don't ever get that. They don't ever do that. And then when it comes time for Satan to really punch them in the face, they just totally lose it. I said, at least you are coming to this now in your life early, and you can come to the conclusion as to what it is that you need to believe. And I said, but here's the scary part. Once you come to a conclusion, that's going to be it. Now, you can always change it, but you have this, you're on this path, and you can choose God or no God. And you got to decide which one it is. And then you have to just say, okay, that's it. I'm walking my life down that path. And a lot of that is faith. But I said, watch out for the other path, because you're going to find out that there's just as much doubt on that path as there is on the path to God. It takes just as much faith to be a non-believer than it is a believer. And I said, where did everything come from? You get down this path and you're like, okay, there's no God. Okay, where did the stars come from? Whoa. Well, they just a couple of things just kind of banged together and then they all and just went through this thing. Okay, so it's a lot of the same process. Go after their soul. What almost derailed Moses on his journey with God from the very beginning? Doubt. Satan placed in his heart the fact that he had not really been even exposed to who God really was for his whole life until God came to him in a burning bush. And then God said, you're the one I need to work. You're the one that I need as a part of my strategy against Satan. And I can't do it. So we not only sometimes doubt God, but we doubt who we are. We doubt ourselves. We doubt our mission. The last thing, hopefully it'll go to the other one, is division. Who's behind the division of the Lord's people in this world? It's not people, it's Satan. He divides us. Why does he do that? Okay, there's strength in numbers. If we are united in purpose and in mind, then it's so much more difficult to defeat us. Think about this. When does a lion attack its prey? By itself. It waits for the weakling. It waits for the one. Why is it that Jesus was so concerned about the one instead of the 99? Because somebody by themselves, out on their own, is so much easier of a target. So much easier prey for Satan. And so he divides us up. One of the ways he divides us up, not only religiously, but also he has made such inroads in dividing us because he's divided our families. He's divided our families. What's the divorce rate in our world? Couples say they're going to be committed to each other and then they don't. And I know there's lots of extenuating circumstances. But our families are so divided. What is the staple or the foundation for every culture? The family. It builds kind of who we are and how we even view God and the church. And so here we are, and Satan is using everything he possibly can to divide us up. I don't know what that's doing. Okay. So let's talk about some strategy real quick. And I'm just going to go through these really quickly. And again, this is just something for you to think about. And I would really like for you in your own life to maybe sit down and actually put together a spiritual strategy. The way that your family lives their life, how is it that we can fight these particular things that Satan is going to throw at me? Because I know he is. The first one is that we have to guard our minds. Romans chapter 12, verse 2 says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. I'm in the world, but I'm not of the world. I'm filtering. Right? I learn how to filter through God's word the messages that I'm receiving. It doesn't mean that it's a sin to watch TV. It doesn't mean it's a sin to go to movies or to listen to music. But what I'm able to do is I'm able to somehow filter that. And sometimes the filter is the off button. Sometimes it is. Or to change the channel button. Right? I can find something. If I have a little time, I can find something that I can get something out of that's going to be positive. So I have to learn to filter. My mind has to be transformed to see things in a different way. Second, I have to learn to stay focused on God. He says, set your affections on things that are above, not on things of the earth. Where your heart is, that's where your what is? Your treasure. Or is it where your treasure is, that's where your heart is? One or the other, but it's the same thing, right? The things that I choose to participate in, the things that Satan tries to get me distracted with, I need to learn how to stay, how to avoid those distractions and stay focused on the things that God would have me to do. Strategy number three, okay, avoid division. That doesn't seem like rocket science. He's divisive. Avoid division. As a Christian body, we let nothing divide us. I don't care if I have a beef with Brandon. I don't care if we have issues. We work them out. We walk through them. And we don't allow it to divide us. Whether it's doctrinal issues or whether it's whatever it is, we walk through them together as a family. In our families, a man and a wife decide to stay married. We decide to avoid division. We will not split our family. I know I'm a jerk sometimes. I get that. So are you. But we... Were you talking about you or Meredith? Her back was turned and you went... Okay? I don't know. Yeah. But we decide to not be divided. We decide. It's a decision. It says, make every effort to preserve the unity of the Spirit with the peace that ties you together. One of the words it says is, make and what? Effort. It is our effort that's going to make all the difference. And last, I know I'm going way over time. I did this so it would be shorter and it didn't work out that way. 4, hold on to hope. When it comes to doubt, what's the opposite of doubt? Hope. And for us, hope is not, oh, I wish we're going to go to P.F. Chang's today. Okay, we're not. I already know that. Okay, but I wish we're going to do this. I hope we're going to do that. Hope, when it talks in the Bible, it says hope is what? An anchor that holds us steady. And it says the winds will come and it'll toss us around like a ship. And guess what? I don't move. Now, I may waver a little from here to there, but the point is I'm anchored to what it is that holds me together, and that's God. And when I come to that conclusion, like this girl at school has going to have to make a decision on her own. I said, you can't survive on the faith of your family, on your parents. You just can't do it. Once you come to that conclusion, then you have to anchor yourself. And don't let anything move you. I'm not sure where it goes from here. So Satan has a strategy to win the victory over us. And what are we doing to see, understand, and counteract that strategy? My challenge for you is this. Not to take the points that I've made, okay? Not to think, okay, well, if I'll do everything that Dave said this morning, man, we'll just... That's not what I want. What I want you to see from the lesson today is that a strategy is important. And that those of us that are not planners, if you don't plan in any area of your life, you need to at least have a spiritual strategy in your life. And then you need to stick to it. That's the part for me that's the worst, is actually sticking to the strategy. Become someone who has a strategy to overcome Satan in your life and have it written. And let your kids know this is our strategy. This is what we do in our home. And we will not waver from it. And that's the only way that you're going to ever defeat an enemy, especially of the power of Satan, is that we defeat him with a strategy. Not just head on. If I try to go right head on at him, guess I'm going to lose. I'm going to lose. But he's not going to do that. Why? Why does Satan have to hide? He's already lost. If he comes at me, guess who's behind me? It's like the story of the little kid who was having trouble with a bully. And every day he was just cowering. I think giving him his milk money or whatever it was. And one day he decided he was going to stand up to the bully. And his big brother had been talking to him and had overheard him. And so as the little boy is going to meet this bully, the big brother follows him. And he's at a distance and he's standing like this. And the bully sees his brother, and guess what? Ooh, I'm not messing with that kid anymore. And the kid thinks it's him, of course. You know, God allows us to have that to happen, but we have to know that God is there. So Satan's going to hide, and he's going to develop these strategies in our lives, and he's going to hit us when we're most vulnerable. And that is the trick. And that is what it's going to take for us to begin this winning these battles in our lives against Satan. I hope that something that I said, and hope this thing wasn't too distracting, trying to figure out what I was doing. But I hope something I've said has made you at least think about, because it has me. And this is something that I have been really thinking about in my own life. Ever since I saw the movie War Room. And if you didn't see that movie, when it comes out on DVD, you need to go the first night it comes out. It is one of the best movies I've ever seen at giving you the challenge of having a strategy. And that if you have a strategy and you focus on that strategy, then you can do so much more than if you didn't. And so that's the challenge for today. And if you are a person that in your life has been struggling with the spiritual warfare and struggling with losing these battles to Satan again and again and again, I pray that you will take something to heart that I've said and that we will begin developing a strategy. I personally believe that maybe we need to sit down as a church and have a strategy session. And we need to talk about some things that we as a body can do in this community as Satan continues to come at us. Chris and I were talking the other night about class. And it's like, I don't know about any of the other teachers that teach, but it's like this growing frustration among our teachers because the kids are so much different than we used to have. They're so much different. And then Chris said something to me the other night. He said, but what I've discovered is maybe I've lost sight of what we're really doing. It's not about getting in and getting through a full Bible lesson. It's about building a relationship with a child that will carry on beyond class. So maybe we need to have a strategy session and talk about some things that we can do as we move forward at Echo Hills. But if you have a need today, if you want to become a Christian, of course that opportunity is available, and we would love to baptize you into Christ. If you are here and you would like a specific prayer, maybe you're struggling with something specific, then either you can come during the singing or you can catch one of the men, Jimmy or Dad or Matt or Johnny or me or whoever, Brandon, afterwards, and we'd be happy to step in a room and pray with you this morning and help to give you some encouragement. So Chris has chosen a song, and as we sing the song, let's all stand, and if you need something, you can come forward.
Stand. My heart.